figures it would rather focus on saving your life than digesting your food. These two actions cause some of the high blood sugar and stomach problems associated with stress. Once the stressor has passed, cortisol tells the body to stop producing these hormones and to resume digestion. But cortisol continues to have a huge impact on your blood sugar, particularly on how your body uses fuel. A catabolic hormone, cortisol tells your body what fat, protein, or carbohydrates to burn and when to burn them, depending on what kind of challenge you face. Cortisol can either take your fat in the form of triglycerides and move it to your muscle, or break down muscle and convert it into glycogen for more energy. That's not all it breaks down. Excess cortisol also deconstructs bone and skin, leading to osteoporosis, easy bruising, and stretch marks. While the epinephrine, aka adrenaline rush of acute stress, suppresses appetite, who really wants to eat when a bully is about to punch you? Any cortisol hanging around after the fact will stimulate it. If you haven't released the excess cortisol in your blood by punching back or running away, cortisol will increase your cravings for high-fat, high-carb foods. Cortisol also lowers leptin levels and increases levels of neuropeptide Y, NPY, shifts proven to stimulate appetite. Once you eat, your body releases a cascade of rewarding brain chemicals that can set up an addictive relationship with food. You feel stressed, you eat. Your body releases natural opioids, you feel better. If you don't consciously avoid this pattern, you can become physically and psychologically dependent on that release to manage stress. It's no coincidence that stress eaters who self-medicate with food tend to have hair trigger epinephrine reactions and chronically high levels of cortisol. When stress continues for a long time and cortisol levels remain high, the body actually resists weight loss. Your body thinks times are hard and you might starve, so it greedily hoards any food you eat and any fat already present on your body. Cortisol also turns adipocytes, young fat cells, into mature fat cells that stick with us forever. Cortisol tends to take fat from healthier areas, like your butt and hips, and move it to your abdomen, where cortisol has more receptors. In the process, it turns once healthy peripheral fat into unhealthy visceral fat that increases inflammation and insulin resistance in the body. This belly fat then leads to more cortisol because it has higher concentrations of a specific enzyme that converts inactive cortisone to active cortisol. The more belly fat you have, the more active cortisol will be converted by these enzymes. Yet another vicious cycle created by visceral fat. How norepinephrine, epinephrine, and cortisol get out of whack. Depending on genes and early childhood experiences, some lucky people may have very mellow adrenal reactions to stressful situations. Many other people, however, tend to over-respond, even to minor threats, because the stress feedback loop became stronger and stronger with each negative experience in their past. By the time these people are adults, their bodies have very touchy stress response systems. Chronic overstimulation of our adrenals is epidemic in this country. We are both victims of and addicted to our stress. And our bodies pay the price. Long-term activation of the stress system has a lethal effect on the body. When you abuse your adrenals as much as we do, you set yourself up for heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and other potentially fatal conditions. But before you even get there, you could completely fry your adrenals. Metabolic hormone number 10, growth hormone. Growth hormone, sometimes called HGH, is one of those hormones that we all want more of. It seems to make everything better. It builds muscle, burns fat, helps you resist heart disease, protects your bones, increases your overall health, and some say it even makes you happier. People with higher levels of growth hormone live longer and better. But don't get HGH shots just yet. Supplementation is controversial and risky, and may even cause insulin resistance. One of the primary goals of this program is to protect and increase your natural production of growth hormone. Where growth hormone is produced? The pituitary, a tiny gland nestled underneath the hypothalamus in the brain. Growth hormone is one of the most influential anabolic hormones, playing a huge role in the growth of bone and other body tissue while also enhancing immunity. How growth hormone impacts metabolism. Growth hormone increases your muscle mass in several ways. It helps to absorb amino acids, helps synthesize them into muscle, and then prevents the muscle from breaking down. All these actions raise your resting metabolic rate and give you more power for your workouts. Growth hormone is also amazing at helping you tap into your fat stores. Fat cells have growth hormone receptors that trigger your cells to break down and burn your triglycerides. Growth hormone also discourages your fat cells from absorbing or holding on to any fat floating around in your bloodstream. Add to these amazing feats the fact that growth hormone can be your liver's best friend. It helps to maintain and protect the pancreatic islets that produce insulin and also helps the liver synthesize glucose. Growth hormone promotes gluconeogenesis, a really cool process by which the body can create carbs out of protein. Gluconeogenesis helps you lose fat faster while providing your brain and other tissues with the energy they need without excess dietary carbs. Growth hormone actually counters insulin's ability to shuttle glucose into cells, nudging it into the liver instead. Unfortunately, this action is one of the reasons excess supplemental growth hormone can cause insulin resistance, which is why you have to be very careful before you go down that road. How growth hormone gets out of whack. Growth hormone deficiency is a very real condition, especially detrimental in childhood. Kids without enough growth hormone end up shorter and have delayed sexual development, and their growth hormone shortfall can continue into adulthood. Growth hormone deficiency can begin in adulthood as well, but can be harder to diagnose then, as symptoms include some common characteristics of aging, such as declining bone mass, energy, and strength. The fact that this medically definable condition exists has given some anti-aging clinics the latitude to supplement their patients interested in growth hormone's fat-burning, muscle-building traits. Just as in menopause and andropause, the sad fact is that growth hormone naturally starts to decline sometime after our 30s. But we also do many things that hasten that decline prematurely, and we should look to change those behaviors before we ever consider supplementation. Of all the less than smart things we do to mess up our hormone balance, depriving ourselves of good quality sleep is probably the dumbest. Growth hormone is released in adults in 5 pulses on average throughout each day. The largest of these pulses happens during our deepest stage 4 sleep, about 1 hour after we first drop off. A University of Chicago study found that when people are deprived of this stage of sleep, with minor disturbances that didn't quite wake them but interfered with the quality of their sleep, their daily growth hormone levels fell 23%. Another way we suppress our own growth hormone levels is when we eat too many low-quality carbs and keep our blood sugar and insulin high. Protein, on the other hand, can help release higher levels of growth hormone, so if we shortchange ourselves there in favor of carbs, we slam our production on 2 levels. New evidence is also starting to emerge that hormones from pesticides and other contaminants in our environment and diet can impact our growth hormone levels. One surefire way we turn our bodies into growth hormone factories is with intense exercise. During intense exercise, and especially during intervals, growth hormone shuns glucose and instead encourages the body to use fat as its fuel. Not only does this help you burn fat while you exercise, it keeps your blood glucose level stable so that you have the energy to keep exercising. When you don't exercise and your muscles become insulin resistant, you increase your level of circulating insulin and you suppress growth hormone even further. We need to get off our butts and capitalize on this incredibly healthy way to reverse aging, not jab ourselves with HGH syringes. Metabolic hormone number 11, leptin. Scientists used to believe that fat cells were just big blobs of yuck waiting to get bigger or smaller. Now they know that our fat is an enormous endocrine gland, actively producing and reacting to hormones. While scientists continue to identify more and more fat cell hormones every day, perhaps the best studied of these hormones is leptin. Where leptin is produced. Fat cells. Leptin is a protein made by fat cells that is controlled by an influential gene called the OB gene. Leptin works with other hormones, thyroid, cortisol, and insulin, to help your body figure out how hungry it is, how fast it will burn off the food you eat, and if it will hang on to or let go of weight. How leptin impacts your metabolism. You have receptors for leptin scattered everywhere, but your brain is where this hormone is most active. When you've eaten a meal, the fat cells throughout your body release this hormone. Leptin travels to the hypothalamus, the part of the brain that helps regulate appetite, and bonds with leptin receptors there. These receptors control the production of neuropeptides, small signaling proteins that switch our appetites on and off. One of the most well-known of these is neuropeptide Y, the peptide that turns on the appetite and turns down the metabolic rate. Leptin switches off neuropeptide Y, switches on appetite-suppressing signals, and the body gets the message to stop being hungry and start burning more calories. When it's working the right way, leptin also helps the body tap into longer-term fat stores and reduce them. But when leptin signaling doesn't work, you keep eating because you never feel like you've had enough food. In addition to the leptin release you get after eating, your body also experiences a leptin surge overnight while you sleep. This leptin surge boosts your levels of thyroid-stimulating hormone, which helps the thyroid release thyroxine. How leptin gets out of whack. Leptin can go wrong in several ways. One, you could be born with low levels of leptin. Scientists have found that a mutation of the OB gene hurts our leptin production. This mutation causes certain children to become severely obese. Simple supplementation with leptin usually helps these children maintain a healthy weight. This condition is extremely rare. You would definitely know by now if you had it. Believe it or not, low levels are not our biggest leptin problem. Researchers are finding that many people who are overweight actually have very high levels of leptin. How could this be? Well, the more fat you have, the more leptin you produce. And similar to what happens in insulin resistance, when the body continually cranks out excess levels of leptin in response to overeating, the receptors for leptin can start to get worn out and no longer recognize it. People with leptin resistance have high levels of circulating leptin, but their receptors cannot accept it. Neuropeptide Y never gets shut off, they remain hungry, and their metabolism slows down. Leptin resistance and insulin resistance go hand in hand, but just like with insulin resistance, if you lose a bit of weight, your body will become more sensitive to leptin, and it will start acting the way it was intended to help you push away from the table and say, enough. Metabolic hormone number 12, ghrelin. Leptin and ghrelin act in a kind of yin-yang balance between hunger and satisfaction. Just as leptin tells the brain to turn off hunger, ghrelin tells the brain that you're famished. Where ghrelin is produced. The stomach, duodenum, and upper intestine. When you're hungry, about to eat, or even just thinking about eating something delicious, your gut releases ghrelin. Acting as a messenger, ghrelin then travels up to your hypothalamus and turns on neuropeptide Y, which increases your appetite and decreases metabolic burn. Ghrelin has one good thing going for it, though. It helps the pituitary release growth hormone. How ghrelin impacts your metabolism. In your average Jane, ghrelin goes up when the stomach is empty. This hormone is the reason you always feel hungry at particular moments in the day. Your body's clock triggers the release of ghrelin according to a finely tuned schedule. Ghrelin levels will stay up until you've given your body enough nutrients to satisfy its needs. Because those signals can take a few minutes to kick in, eating slowly may help you to eat less overall. By the time your stomach fills up, ghrelin levels start to drop again, you feel satisfied, and you can stop eating. Interestingly, it's not ghrelin itself that makes you feel hungry. That hunger is stimulated in part by neuropeptide Y and also by the growth hormone it releases. In fact, ghrelin levels must rise to allow the release of growth hormone. That's just one of the many reasons why this plan does not allow eating after 9 p.m. I want that food to be nearly out of your system by the time you head to bed. Your body requires ghrelin to enable you to move effectively through all the necessary phases of sleep. Without the proper progression, you won't get to stage 4 sleep, during which you get a big pulse of growth hormone, or to the REM sleep that helps protect leptin levels. For the rest of the day, though, the object is to keep ghrelin levels low. You don't need the extra diet-endangering hunger and all the metabolic havoc those resulting blood sugar ups and downs wreak on your system. How ghrelin gets out of whack. You have to stay ahead of those ghrelin surges because ghrelin is crafty about getting you to eat. New research shows that it triggers reward centers in the brain to make food look more appetizing. These areas of the brain have been linked to drug addiction for many years, and researchers believe ghrelin triggers these centers even when you don't have any reason to eat other than passing a bakery just as the bread comes out of the oven. Constant calorie restriction keeps ghrelin levels high, which may be why some yo-yo dieters feel like their hunger just keeps getting worse the fewer calories they eat. This is all part of nature's way of getting us to eat. Eat already. As we walk around in a world of way too much French bread, this ever-rising ghrelin is probably a big part of what makes maintaining weight loss so challenging. Interestingly, a select group of people may feel better when they have higher levels of ghrelin. People with anorexia nervosa actually have much higher levels of ghrelin than average people, whereas people with binge eating disorder have lower levels. Binge eaters' ghrelin production may take a hit after they repeatedly eat well beyond the point where ghrelin is no longer making them hungry. As with other hormones, their hormonal feedback system no longer works. On the other hand, animal studies suggest that increases in ghrelin may help some people manage depression caused by chronic stress. Perhaps in people with anorexia, ghrelin acts almost as an antidepressant. A reduction in ghrelin levels might even be one of the ways that gastric bypass surgery reduces people's weight. When you go into your stomach and literally remove the cells that produce ghrelin, you feel less hunger. But I don't know, that seems a tad extreme to me. We can come up with better ways to manage your ghrelin than going under the knife, like eating balanced meals every 4 hours and hitting the sheets for 8 hours a night. That doesn't sound so bad, does it? Every choice you make in your life impacts this very complex chemistry. Where you live, how long you sleep, whether or not you have kids, what you do or don't do for exercise, who's dumping what into your water supply. Now, we can't change everything, but we do have a great deal of power over what we put in our mouths, on our skin, and in our minds. First, let's take a look at what's causing all these problems. Be prepared to get scared. When I first found out, I certainly was. Once you know what you're up against, you'll learn how to restore your metabolism and put your fat-burning hormones to work again. How you got this way. You now know that your metabolism is made up of different hormones. When these hormones are functioning normally, everything's just fine. Your muscles use appropriate amounts of blood sugar, your insulin stays stable, your thyroid hums along normally, everything is in balance, burning off energy as you take it in. But when those hormone levels start getting funky and one goes south, the rest scratch their heads and go, huh? Then they try to sort things out for themselves. Each gland starts over or underproducing its hormone in a desperate attempt to get back to homeostasis. And that's when the pounds pile on. Any factor that gets in the way of your body's normal hormone functioning spells trouble for your metabolism. An endocrine disruptor is any substance or influence that somehow alters the way the body's hormones usually work. They may increase, decrease, or change the normal activity of hormones in a number of ways, including mimicking a hormone and clicking into a receptor, setting it off as if it were the hormone itself, blocking a real hormone from having access to its receptor, increasing or decreasing the number of hormone receptors in certain parts of the body, changing the amount of a specific hormone that's produced, or impacting the speed at which the hormones are processed in the body. Any of these actions can set up a chain of events. For example, let's say your body absorbs bisphenol A, a chemical that's been shown to leach out of polycarbonate plastic containers into the liquids they hold. Studies on animals have found that those exogenous estrogens zoom into the body and within as little as 30 minutes decrease blood sugar levels and sharply increase insulin levels. After just 4 days of exposure, that BPA stimulates the pancreas to secrete more insulin and the body starts to become insulin resistant. Now consider the fact that we have more than 1,000 additive chemicals in our packaging and food processing. Think of how many other plastics hit your lips or your food in one day. That styrofoam coffee cup, the squeeze bottle of salad dressing, the cling wrap around your leftovers, the liner in a can of soup, that microwavable bag of vegetables. Think of the scents in your laundry detergent and the chlorine bleach in your bathroom scrub, the Camelon truck parked in front of your neighbor's house, the ... Can you see how a teeny little problem might start to snowball? This diet and lifestyle program is all about stopping that endocrine-disrupting snowball before it picks up new problems, careens downhill, and destroys everything in its path. As with nearly everything in our overbloated society, one of the reasons we're getting so fat is because of the way we consume. We purchase in bulk. We want things to be cheap. We want them to last forever on the shelf. All of this comes at a hefty cost to our health. Let's take a look at some of the factors that might set the snowball off on its rapid and destructive descent. I can't tell you how many people just let exercise slide as they get older, and then turn around and blame their lagging metabolism on their hormones. That's why I want to get the age question out of the way as soon as possible. A few hormones increase as we get older, others stay the same, but I'll admit it, most hormones are headed in one direction, south. Yes, as we age, our hormones shift in ways that encourage weight gain. For example, as you get older, the leptin receptors in your brain start to decrease, so your body doesn't recognize when you're full, which can lead you to overeat. In women, female hormones decrease and insulin-regulating hormones are less effective, both of which can lead to more pounds. For men, bioavailable testosterone levels tend to decline gradually, about 1.5% per year after age 30, and DHEA levels decline even faster, 2 to 3% per year. These declines can decrease muscle mass and energy while they increase belly fat and insulin resistance. They also make you irritable and depressed, which is all very bad news for your metabolism. These hormonal declines give drug companies and hormone pushers all the ammunition they need. They use them to support their marketing claims that we need to supplement with synthetic or bioidentical hormones to compensate for the hit to our metabolism or to help extend our lives. But do we really? A major study of more than 1,100 men aged 40 to 70 found that if they maintained a healthy weight, stayed away from excessive drinking, and avoided serious illnesses like diabetes and heart disease, they could add 10 to 15% to the levels of several hormones, especially their androgens. Every day, though, more and more research points to the fact that age-related muscle decline is largely under our control. We've spent years blaming the fat on our bellies on our advancing years. But the truth is, we just haven't been taking care of ourselves. The more we eat clean, live clean, and work out, the better our hormone balance will be and the healthier our metabolism will remain. Look, I'll be honest, I don't like to exercise, but the reality is we have to do it. Your body needs it like it needs oxygen and water. First of all, every pound of muscle burns 3 times more calories than every pound of fat does. Muscles scoop up blood sugar and enhance your body's insulin sensitivity. Exercise reduces weight gain hormones like cortisol by releasing endorphins to combat stress and increases fat-burning hormones like testosterone, human growth hormone, DHEA, and thyroxine T4 production. You need exercise, period. If you're listening to this now, I'm willing to bet that you've given this weight loss thing a go or two in your lifetime. About 75% of Americans are concerned about their weight, but most are not going about addressing it in the right way. A survey by the International Food Information Council found that only 15% could accurately estimate the number of calories they should be eating for their height and weight. That lack of knowledge sets us up to fail. People go to crazy extremes to lose weight. They cut out entire macronutrients like carbs or fat. This is all bad, bad, bad. This type of dieting directly disrupts your hormone balance, sending survival messages to the body to store fat and slow down your metabolism in case the state of famine persists. Most weight cyclers, aka yo-yo dieters, have been on diets all their life. This pattern of eating starts as early as the teen years. One study done at the University of Minnesota tracked 2,500 teens, both boys and girls, for 5 years and found that those who dieted were 3 times more likely to be overweight and 6 times more likely to be binge eaters than their peers who'd never dieted. The Nurses' Health study found that severe weight cyclers, those who'd lost at least 20 pounds 3 times within the past 4 years, gained an average of 10 pounds more than women who'd maintained a more stable weight. Weight cyclers typically prefer to diet to lose weight as opposed to eating proper portions of the right foods. This becomes an even bigger problem when paired with a lack of exercise. Not only is this up and down pattern frustrating, it makes each weight loss attempt more frustrating than the one before, especially if you lost weight by starving your body. You have to work out when you diet to maintain your muscle mass. This calorie partitioning ensures that the calories you do consume go toward rebuilding and repairing your muscles. If you don't work out once the diet is over, it becomes apparent pretty quickly that you've just screwed yourself. Starvation diets are catabolic. They prompt your body to cannibalize your muscles for fuel. Your body, wisely, is thinking about long-term survival and wants to hold on to all the calories it can in case of a prolonged famine. Without that muscle, your metabolism is slower. Plus, your powerful metabolic thyroid hormones are lowered. And the most significant change in thyroid and resting metabolic rate comes when people make the most drastic cuts in their calories. So many people I've worked with got themselves into a fast, slip-up, binge pattern. You desperately want to lose pounds for the big day and figure a couple of weeks of 800 calories a day can do only good things. What happens? Well, first of all, your metabolism downgrades itself incredibly fast. Then you go back to what would be considered normal eating of roughly 1,600 to 2,000 calories a day and you're toast. Your T3 levels have plummeted. Your sensitivity to leptin and insulin has taken a hit. Your ghrelin has shot through the roof, and on it goes. Some foods, especially processed foods, are murder on hormone balance. Why? Here's the dirty little secret. Our bodies don't recognize them as foods. Processed foods don't come from nature. They come from factories. The more productive the factories, the more money the corporation makes. And the less the corporation can spend on the cheap raw materials going into those factories, the higher the profit margins. Well, who can blame them? Higher profits, higher productivity. Isn't that the American way? Put pennies in, take dollars out. That must get kind of addictive, kind of like the foods they're creating. Our 21st century diet is composed primarily of corn, soy, and wheat, whether or not we ever consciously recognize them on our plates. These crops have been subsidized for so long and have become so inexpensive for food manufacturers that they're constantly trying to figure out new ways to use these cheap ingredients. And through the miracle of modern chemistry, food manufacturers essentially do just that. You may think you're about to eat a piece of lunch meat, bowl of soup, glass of juice, but it's really basically wheat, soy, or corn. Refined wheat flour, hydrolyzed soy protein, a partially hydrogenated corn oil, high fructose corn syrup, with a bit of salt thrown in too, another cheap additive. How do they do that? How do they get us to eat these 3 foods in everything? Well, food manufacturers take these 3 incredibly cheap, incredibly bland ingredients, and add a whole melange of chemicals to make them actually have taste. Think of corn, soy, and wheat as the blank canvas upon which the food science industry paints the illusion of food. And to keep the illusion going, they may even be resorting to dirty tricks. Foods high in fat and sugar make the brain release endogenous opioids, aka biological morphine. If you've ever thought of an Oreo made up of nearly 60% sugar and fat as a drug you had a Jones for, you're right on the money. Just like when an addict is reminded of his drug, your brain's orbitofrontal cortex, the center of motivation and cravings, is stimulated when you see, smell, or taste foods you crave. Yes, people, we can get high on dessert, and we can get addicted. Well, you could just say no, say the people arguing for personal responsibility, but here's where the story gets a bit tricky. A 2005 investigative series from the Chicago Tribune reported that Kraft, the makers of the Oreo cookie, had shared brain research with scientists from Philip Morris, the tobacco company, and Miller Brewing, the beer maker, all corporate partners at the time. Cigarettes, alcohol, and Oreos. What could they all possibly have in common? When the Tribune broke the story, the Kraft spokesperson said it was just good business to have their scientists look for ways to exchange information, share best practices, and identify efficiencies that reduce overall costs. Interesting, huh? Bottom line, the more processed the food is, the greater the chance is that some unscrupulous biochemist is tinkering around with your neurochemistry to make you want to eat more and more and more. Most of the crops food manufacturers are getting their main ingredients from are genetically modified or sprinkled with dozens of endocrine-disrupting pesticides. Our buddy corn is one of the worst offenders. The Organic Consumers Organization reported that every year the corn fed to animals and turned into other corn products is sprayed with 162 million pounds of chemical pesticides. We have no idea what's going into our bodies. And it shows. A recent large-scale epidemiological study by the National Institutes of Health looked at what happened to 30,000 people, mostly men, who used pesticides in their work on farms. These licensed applicators of the chemicals probably had protective gear, goggles, gloves, boots, overalls, the whole nine yards. Yet researchers found that if these men used any one of seven specific pesticides, even if they used them just once, they had a much greater risk of diabetes. The results suggest that being exposed to pesticides may be a significant contributing factor to diabetes, just like obesity, lack of exercise, or a family history. One of these pesticides, triclosan, is a popular product often used on lawns and golf courses. This study found that people who had used this chemical just 10 or more times had a nearly 250% greater chance of developing diabetes. Now, I ask you, how many rounds of golf have you played in your lifetime? How many times has the Chemlon truck parked in front of your neighbor's house or your own? Now, consider our diet. As consumers, we're not only touching plants with pesticides on them, we're eating them. In some parts of the world, triclosan is even poured over cattle to treat them for pests. Some pesticides that have been banned in the States for more than 20 years are still hanging around in our food supply. They accumulate in the fatty tissue of our bodies and stick with us for decades. They're found in fish, birds, other mammals, human breast milk. The CDC says we get exposed to organochlorines, a family of toxic chemicals found in pesticides, through eating fatty foods, such as milk, dairy products, or fish that are contaminated with these pesticides. Eating foods imported from countries that still allow the use of these pesticides. Breastfeeding or through the placenta when we are in utero. Our skin. Some researchers argue that pesticides may be more to blame for insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes than obesity is. One study of more than 2,000 adults found that at least 80% had detectable levels of six persistent organic pollutants, or POPs, chemicals that remain in our tissues for up to 10 years, possibly more. Those people whose bodies had high levels of POPs, such as dioxin, PCBs, and chlordane, were 38 times more likely to be insulin resistant than people with low levels. Even people who were fatter but didn't have any traces of POPs in their systems had much lower rates of diabetes. I'm not saying pesticides are the only cause of diabetes, but it's clear that the POPs in your body fat continue to interact with the excess pounds to drive up your diabetes risk even further. I didn't even mention the organochlorine's other fun side effects: tremors, headaches, skin irritations, breathing problems, dizziness, nausea, seizures. Oh, and cancer, brain damage, Parkinson's disease, birth defects, respiratory illness, abnormal immune system function. Shall I go on? Stress is like kryptonite for your hormones. Even just a bit of it can throw them entirely out of whack. If you remain a stress case for a long time, you could do some major damage to many parts of your body, including your glands. Just think of how I screwed up my thyroid with years of cortisol overload, calorie deprivation, and overall general abuse. According to Dr. Scott Isaacs, author of The Leptin Boost Diet and guru of all things hormonal, stress can cause leptin resistance, insulin resistance, lower estrogen estradiol in women, lower testosterone in men, lower levels of growth hormone, higher cortisol levels, and impaired conversion of thyroid hormone. Every single one of these hormonal changes will slow down your metabolism and cause you to gain weight. Add them together and then throw in all the behavioral issues that come with stress, eating on the run, stress snacking, eating at night, not exercising, excess caffeine and or alcohol, even a stolen cigarette or two, and you'll see that stress is a major source of endocrine disruption. Perhaps one of the biggest causes and symptoms of the hormonal shutdown from stress is when people start to cut into their hours of quality sleep. The percentage of young adults sleeping 8 to 9 hours per night has almost been cut in half in the past 50 years, from 40% in 1960 to 23% in 2002. During the same time period, the incidence of obesity has nearly doubled. Coincidence? We need our rest. Okay, guys, don't panic. When you look at all of these factors together, it's kind of unbelievable that everyone isn't morbidly obese. We are locked in a struggle. There's no doubt about it. But once we've had our eyes opened, we can start to do things differently. Each change you make here will make a positive difference in your endocrine function and create changes of its own. Soon you'll have a much healthier, more balanced endocrine system and a lot less fat to show for it. Now, let's take a look at how we'll accomplish just that. How the diet works. Now that you know what you're up against, you may feel like throwing up your hands and saying, "Forget it. The deck is stacked against me. I can't possibly fight back." But you can. What you need is a plan, a program, a systematic way of fending off the assaults on your endocrine system, no matter where they may be coming from. A science-based approach that will recalibrate your hormonal levels so you can be healthy and reset your metabolism to do what it was meant to do: burn calories and shed fat. So how are we going to do that? Simple, really. We're going to come at this in 3 steps. You're going to remove the toxins from your diet and your environment, restore the nutrients to your food and supplement plan, and rebalance the energy that goes into and comes out of your body. Just these 3 steps will be all most people need to trigger the fat-burning hormones, quiet down those fat-storing hormones, and get your body back to being a lean, mean machine. Step 1, remove. I just told you about the absolutely horrific amount of toxicity in our food and environment. We've talked about how some of these toxins have disrupted our endocrine systems, damaged our metabolisms, made us sick, made us look older and feel less vital, and also, yes, made us fat. We have to get as far away from this crap as we possibly can. When you think of the 10,000 chemicals that we already have on the shelf, and the 2,000 more added each year, we need to eliminate as much as possible from our diets and our lives and keep holding the line. Step 1 will walk you through your entire kitchen and pantry and help you get rid of the biggest endocrine offenders. certain endocrine evils you may have already heard of. High fructose corn syrup, gone. Hydrogenated oils, gone. But we'll also talk about some other healthy-sounding foods you may not realize are routinely messing with your hormones. Whoever thought spices could be a bad thing? Once we've trashed all the crap from your diet, all the foods that encourage your hormones to store fat, we can start to rebuild it with foods that will trigger your fat-burning hormones. And that's where step two comes in, restore. Step two, restore. Before you start thinking that this diet is all about what you can't eat, let's get right to the good stuff. I want you to eat how nature intended us to eat. More important is that I want you to eat foods that will flick the on switch to your metabolism. You will eat foods that will repair, nourish, and support every cell in your body so your body will work for you and not against you. Be good to your body and it will be good to you. And I promise you, after 2 weeks on this diet, you'll never want to go back to that processed, chemical-laden crap again. If I had to sum up step two in one sentence, it would be, if it didn't have a mother and it didn't grow from the ground, don't eat it. Cheetos don't have a mother, and I don't know about you. I don't recall seeing a Cheeto tree in my backyard when I was growing up. How do we do this? The biggest part of step two is actually quite simple, and you've likely heard a lot about it. Go organic. While even organic food is not 100% pure, it is by far the best defense we have against endocrine disruptors in our food supply. Now, I know some of you are probably bellyaching right now. Sure, Jillian, easy for you to say. You have the money to do it. I only wish I could afford to eat organic. Here's the deal. You do have the money. If you have $100 a week for groceries, you have the money. Stop wasting money on gossip rags and junk you don't need and invest that extra cash in your health. We're not going for perfection, we're going for maximum impact. That's why I'll share tons of tools for how to eat organic on a budget, let you know what the biggest chemical culprits in our food supply are, and show you how following a few other remove rules will actually save you a lot of cash, dollars you can put directly into your organic produce budget. You'll eat simple, real, naturally occurring food. Organically grown fruits and vegetables, grass-fed beef, organic free-range chicken, ocean-caught fish, whole grains, nuts, beans, seeds. These are foods your body recognizes from way back. In fact, your body knows what to do with every part of these foods. What nutrients get sent to what part of the body, and most important, what foods turn on or off which hormones. These foods make sense to your body. Step three, rebalance. Like I said, I want you to eat, seriously, 3 square meals and 1 snack. That's the only way you're going to convince your hormones that they don't have to hang on to that fat for a rainy day. Once you're eating the foods that your body recognizes and there are no funky endocrine disruptors trying to confuse your hormones and trick them into hoarding fat, your body needs to know that there is plenty where that came from. No shortage here. No way you're ever, ever going to run out of food. When you rebalance, you'll see that eating every 4 hours during the day is best for your body. We'll even talk about how to time your first and last meals of the day to get the very best fat-burning power out of your early morning and late night hormonal swings. And you'll learn that eating before you're hungry will make your metabolism start to hum along like a finely tooled machine. Listening to your body and stopping before you're over full will get easier and easier with practice. And in time, you'll find that being stuffed isn't comfortable or enjoyable. That real food does not exclude any nutrient, carbs, fat, or protein, because hormonal balance, not to mention efficient, safe, permanent weight loss, is possible only when all nutrients are present and accounted for. Now, that covers the energy in portion of the rebalance step. But what about the energy out? You know how much I push exercise. I'm a pusher. It's true. Guilty as charged. But the energy out I'm talking about here is a different kind of energy. I could call it metaphysical energy, but I don't want to seem too new agey. So let's call it the energy you have to do the things you want to do in life. How are you using that energy? How are you protecting that energy? How is that energy impacting your family and friends, job, or love life? How are you recharging and rebalancing that energy? You might be surprised to learn how much the use of your personal energy impacts your hormone levels and your metabolism. How much you sleep, how much you stress and freak out and pull your hair out, how much you, yes, sit on your butt. All of those choices about how you rebalance your energy stores will directly impact how you rebalance your hormone levels, your weight, and your entire life. I know you want to rebalance. We all do. And with the information I'll share with you, you can. Part 2, the master plan. Step 1, remove. Your poor body is stumbling around trying to scrounge something nutritious out of this toxic food environment. Your willpower is not enough to sustain your weight loss efforts because there's too much static. Too many additives and processes have mangled the food supply and confused your body's normal metabolism. That's why, again, I could sum up this entire food plan in one sentence. If it didn't have a mother or it didn't grow from the ground, don't eat it. As you listen to this section, I want you to grab a trash bag, go through your kitchen and refrigerator, and put this stuff directly into the trash. Sometimes you'll read a diet article that says, clean out all your foods and donate them to a soup kitchen or a homeless shelter. Forget that. No one should eat this food. Why should a poor person eat this crappy food if you shouldn't? I want you to make the mental connection that this stuff is poison, horrible for your own or anybody else's body. Yes, you may have paid money for it, but cut your losses and also prevent anyone else from poisoning their body. Throw it away. Anti-nutrient number 1, hydrogenated fats. If there are any evil foods in the world, they include hydrogenated fats. Created for the convenience of the processed foods industry, hydrogenated fats allow foods like chips, crackers, cookies, pies, and bread to sit on the shelf forever and still retain their freshness. I don't know. Is there something wrong with a cookie that can be eaten years after it's produced? Common sense would probably answer yes to that question. Hydrogenated fats are created when a regular fat, such as a corn oil or a palm oil, is blasted with hydrogen to change the liquid into a solid at room temperature. More than any other kind of fat, including saturated fat, hydrogenated fats increase your bad LDL and triglycerides and decrease your good HDL. They also shrink the size of your LDL particles, which makes them more likely to clot and dramatically raises your risk of heart attack. Just a 2% increase in trans fatty acids in your diet increases your chance of heart disease by 23%. Eating excess fried foods, which also include trans fats, can increase your risk of metabolic syndrome by 25%. Trans fats also increase your body's inflammation. People who eat more trans fats have higher blood levels of interleukin-6, a hormone-like substance that's been linked to hardening of the arteries, osteoporosis, type 2 diabetes, and Alzheimer's. Research on animals has found that interleukin-6-induced inflammation also causes the liver to stop responding to growth hormone and the muscles to wither away. And with that, metabolism. Definitely not the effect we're looking for. Anti-nutrient number 2, refined grains. Remember my dictum to eat only food that had a mother or grew from the ground? Once grains are refined, they no longer qualify. Refining grains helps extend their shelf life by removing the bran and the germ of the grain, and with it, almost all the fiber, vitamins, and minerals of the entire grain kernel. And then the B vitamins, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, folic acid, and the iron stripped out during that processing have to be restored by being, quote, enriched. The only people who profit from this process are the corporations, who can then stretch these refined grains with added sugars, salts, fats, and chemicals, and then pocket the savings themselves. Refined grains like white pasta, flour tortillas, white rice, and white bread are devoid of many of the healthful nutrients of grains, and have a large downside. Because they are so easy to digest, they guarantee skyrocketing blood sugar and insulin spikes. Over time, those repeated spikes lead to insulin resistance and diabetes. People who never eat whole grains have a 30% higher risk of diabetes than people who eat just 3 servings of whole grains a day. Corn and wheat are among the worst insulin offenders. The availability of corn flour and cereal products has almost doubled in the last 30 years, and wheat products have increased more than 20%. On the other hand, availability of barley, a nutritional wunderkind, has dropped by a third. In contrast with corn's meager nutritional offerings, barley packs more than 13 grams of fiber in a single cup, helps stabilize blood sugar, and is a fantastic source of selenium, which is essential for thyroid production. It's also rich in magnesium, which helps lower triglycerides and dangerous blood lipids in diabetics. Also consider oats. In addition to their miraculous work on cholesterol, oats significantly lower blood sugar and enhance immune system function. Anti-nutrient number 3, high fructose corn syrup. In the late 70s, the medical establishment laughed at Dr. Atkins when he said that fat didn't make people fat. Carbohydrates made people fat. People thought he was nuts. He was even called in front of Congress to defend himself and his diet. At that point, less than 15% of Americans were obese. Then the low-fat dogma really kicked in. And in the decade that followed, the obesity rate shot up 8 percentage points. Now here we are 30 years later, and we're at 32%. The rise has been exponential. And 30 years after Atkins asserted his controversial stance, surprise, surprise, we take it as common knowledge that carbohydrates make you fat. Our bad. This reversal of accepted wisdom won't take back those years of sugar addiction, sadly. Some of the damage was done, but we can work with our hormones to teach our bodies to react to food the way it did before we overwhelmed our insulin response systems. The only way we'll do this is to dump the most evil refined grain of all, high fructose corn syrup, HFCS. Get this. The U.S. production of HFCS went from 3,000 tons in 1967 to 9,227,000 tons in 2005. Production has increased 350% since 1980 alone. While our average consumption of refined sugar has slowly dwindled in the past 40 years, our consumption of HFCS has shot up almost 20-fold. Tufts University researchers reported that Americans consume more calories from HFCS than from any other source. As one of the cheapest sweeteners around, HFCS helps processed food companies boost their profits for pennies. But all it does for us is boost our fat-storing hormones. A recent University of Florida study found that a high-fructose diet directly causes leptin resistance in lab rats. Another study done at the University of Pennsylvania found that fructose doesn't suppress hunger hormone ghrelin levels the way that glucose, table sugar, does. Women who ate fructose instead of glucose had higher ghrelin levels throughout the day, overnight, and into the next day. Anti-nutrient number 4, artificial sweeteners. The good news? The per capita consumption of regular soda has begun to drop by half a gallon each year. We're still at a staggering 35 gallons a year from an all-time high of almost 40 gallons in 1998. The bad news? We are replacing it with diet soda, climbing steadily at almost half a gallon a year. We think, if sugar is bad, artificial sweeteners must be the answer, right? Hell no! The irony is that artificial sweeteners may put us in even greater metabolic danger than sugar or HFCS. A huge retrospective study of 9,500 people over 9 years found that eating meat and fried foods and drinking diet soda were the 3 most prominent risk factors of whether people developed metabolic syndrome. Compared with people who drank none, those who drank just 1 can of diet soda a day had a 34% greater incidence of metabolic syndrome. Huh? How is this possible? Don't diet sodas take away the sugar? Studies on animals give us a clue to what's happening here. Researchers at Purdue University found that when animals were fed yogurt with saccharin, they later consumed more calories, gained more weight, and put on more body fat than animals that were fed yogurt sweetened with glucose, a natural sugar with the same number of calories, 15 per teaspoon, as table sugar. The theory goes that just as we can have mental and emotional associations with certain tastes, our bodies have caloric associations with sweet tastes. Normally, when we eat sugar, our body registers sweetness and comes to understand that very sweet things mean lots of calories. However, when we repeatedly drink diet soda, this understanding breaks down. Your appetite says, okay, here's the sweetness, but there aren't many calories. That must mean I have to eat a lot of sweet things to get my needed calories. The next time you're given something sweet to eat, your body doesn't recognize how many calories they hold, so you overeat them. And then, in contrast to those people who ate sugar to begin with, you don't make up for those excess calories by eating less at later meals. This next part is even scarier. The Purdue study also found that as the animals continued to eat the artificial sweeteners, their metabolism started to forget that most sweet things do have a lot of calories. Scary. So there's a good chance that when you finally do break down and have that chocolate glazed donut, your body thinks, no big deal, and doesn't bother burning up the calories because sweetness doesn't mean anything. Anti-nutrient number 5, artificial preservatives and colors. Aside from the risks from HFCS and artificial sweeteners, here's one more reason to avoid soda. A major bottler settled a lawsuit with a group of parents who claimed that several of the company's products contained high levels of benzene, a known carcinogen also linked to serious thyroid damage. Benzoate salts are added to soda to prevent mold growth. A Consumer Reports test found that when drinks with these salts sit in plastic soda bottles in direct sunlight or heat, dangerous levels of benzene can form. Coca-Cola removed the additives from several of their products, but these preservatives and many others that have not been adequately tested remain in many other sodas on the shelf. How could an idea with such a good intention to prevent food spoilage and food poisoning go so incredibly wrong? The artificial preservatives in our food supply age us and create all kinds of autoimmune diseases, from multiple forms of cancer to MS. Researchers are discovering more and more that these preservatives are also likely to destroy our biochemistry, inhibit our metabolism, and interfere with our ability to lose weight. Let's take one example, a common preservative, butylated hydroxyanisole, or BHA, has been generally recognized as safe by the FDA, but is still reasonably anticipated to be a human carcinogen. How much sense does that make? This chemical antioxidant helps prevent food spoilage, but it's also an endocrine disruptor. One study determined that the more BHA a male rat received, the less testosterone and T4 he had circulating in his body. These little guys stopped wanting sex, they had fewer and weaker sperm, and their testes shrunk. Plus, their livers and adrenal glands swelled up, and their thyroid glands were completely screwed. Now, consider that we eat BHA in hundreds of foods, including butter, lard, cereals, baked goods, sweets, beer, vegetable oils, potato chips, snack foods, nuts, dehydrated potatoes, flavoring agents, sausage, poultry and meat products, dry mixes for beverages and desserts, glazed fruits, chewing gum, active dry yeast, defoaming agents for beet sugar and yeast, and emulsion stabilizers for shortening. BHA is also found in food packaging, lipsticks, lip glosses, mascaras, eyeshadows, and facial creams. Even if the individual levels of BHA are generally recognized as safe, what happens when we use multiple products that all include them or eat multiple servings? And consider this. BHA could be replaced by vitamin E or left out of some foods altogether. So why take the risk? We could have this same conversation about so many chemical additives for so many devastating health risks. The debate has raged for decades about the link between kids' behavior problems and artificial coloring and preservatives. Pediatricians have often poo-pooed parents' concerns about these chemicals, citing government generally regarded as safe guidelines and saying that parents are just looking for scapegoats for their kids' bad behavior. But a recent randomized double-blind placebo-controlled study, in other words, rock-solid research, in The Lancet proved otherwise. After preschoolers and grade school kids ate an additive-free diet for 6 weeks, then reintroduced additives into their diets, their hyperactivity levels rose dramatically. Considering that the prevalence of ADHD in this country has risen to almost 1 in 10 kids, and a bunch of them are being put on medication at as young as 4, maybe we should do something about this. Some of the absolute worst preservatives for your metabolism are used in processed meats. A landmark NIH study of more than 9,000 people found that the single greatest predictor of a person's chance of developing metabolic syndrome was a steady diet of hamburgers, hot dogs, and processed meats. The sodium nitrate and nitrite in bacon, ham, lunch meat, and hot dogs give processed meat its pink color and prevent the spread of bacteria. But much of that preventative protection could easily be achieved with adequate refrigeration without risks to our health. After analyzing more than 7,000 studies on diet and cancer risk, the American Institute for Cancer Research estimated that for every 3.5 ounces of processed meat you eat per day, the equivalent of one hot dog and 2 slices of smoked turkey breast, your risk of colon cancer